powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Here we go now.
Happy Monday, everyone, and happy Monday, Bump and Curtis. How are you guys this morning?
Happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
Monday, when we know who the Super Bowl 57 teams are going to be, go figure. It's the number one seeded
Were
Chiefs.
You singing right now? No.
No, I said Monday.
And then I thought you were going to say no.
I always have a little phlegm in my throat in the morning. It's the only reason it didn't sound great.
Okay.
Normally it would be great. I'll figure it out later. Super Bowl 57 is set. Both number one seeds are going to face off in the big game. Check this out. The last time both number one seeds faced off in the Super Bowl, it was actually the last time the Eagles were in the Super Bowl. 2017 Super Bowl 52, Eagles beat the Pats. Since the NFL began using postseason seeding in 1975... don't look at the show sheet. If you guys had to guess how many times both number one seeds played each other, what number would you throw out?
I was looking at the show sheet, as you said.
What
don't look
did
at
you
the
think
show
wow.
sheet.
Beforehand?
I wasn't thinking anything. I was like, oh, there it is. There's the answer.
Curtis?
So I can't even guess.
I'm going to say 8 times.
13 times.
Okay.
13 times since 1975 that both teams, the number one seeds, have been facing each other. It's happening again this year. Again, last time when the Eagles won, what does it mean? Who knows? But let's talk about some of these games. Guys, how do we feel? We'll talk about how we feel about this matchup now 2 weeks out. But let's talk about how we feel about these games this past weekend. I expected 2 Super Bowls. Instead, what we got was a great AFC conference game and a very one-sided NFC game.
Underwhelming, the San Francisco Philadelphia game. You were waiting for Brock Purdy to see if he's going to have his moment.
Yeah.
Is he going to be one of the only rookie, if not the only rookie, to take a team to a Super Bowl and be Mr. Irrelevant and see what happens there? But soon after the game starts, he's out. And I'm not going to lie, I was disappointed. I'm looking at him and I saw the interaction he had with Kyle Shanahan and I'm thinking, man, you got to at least get out there for a snap and see if you can throw the football. Like, he's on the sideline saying he can't do it. Lo and behold, he's injured. I get it. Philadelphia at that point has so much confidence. They knew there was nothing San Francisco could do to hurt them. Mm-hmm. You bring in Johnson, he gets banged up, he's out, and now Purdy comes back in and all he's good for is a screen. At that point, I knew the game was over. As soon as Purdy was out, I'm telling my boys, I watched the game with Moyer, Wyman, Nassa, B-Walt, Babineau, and we're watching the game, Big Ray, and I said, look, the game's over. As soon as the quarterback went out, the game is over. And Philadelphia looked dominant. I just wish that San Francisco gave them everything that they had. It's just underwhelming. The other game was everything I thought it would be. Came down to the last drive.
Fantastic game.
Two great quarterbacks. Joe Burrow struggled a bit, had 2 interceptions, had to overcome that. You got the drama on the other side with Patrick Mahomes. He's fighting through an ankle injury. I'm watching him every play to see how he's pushing off of it. That was a great game. NFC, not so much.
Why did Patrick Mahomes look like he constantly had to be held back, by the way? Did anyone else notice this? Like, there were a couple plays where it was like, is Patrick Mahomes trying to fight someone? I mean, I think he was just frustrated.
Yeah.
He was just, like, getting back to the huddle and, like, really, like, hyped up. He was probably on pure adrenaline and painkillers to get through that one, which, like, God love him, man. Like, he had a phenomenal game, and there were so many plays he made. I saw Doug Farrar retweet one that was a completion to, I want to say, Hardman, and Jermaine Pratt was in his face, and it's like everything, the Bengals did everything right. Like, every other quarterback in the league has an incompletion or throws it away or takes a sack, and Patrick Mahomes completed for another first down.
Pat Mahomes, now, I'll talk about this more in 4-down territory, but Pat Mahomes had a signature game. Watching this game, being in this moment, I don't think you're really going to appreciate what we saw. The high ankle sprain, him battling through that thing, didn't turn the football over, threw for over 300 yards, ran to essentially win the game on a broken leg, essentially. He had one of those signature games, something that we're going to talk about. Now, in the moment,
Jordan's flu game.
In the moment, we're looking at this and we're gonna critique it. We're gonna say what went wrong, what went right. Referees messed this up. They could have done that. But in hindsight, years from now, when Pat Mahomes is a seasoned veteran, when he has a couple Super Bowls, when he's been to the Pro Bowl 7-8 years in a row, we're gonna look back at this game and say, man, he toughed that one out. That was a gutty performance. He looked hurt. You can tell he couldn't push off that foot. He couldn't move the way that he wanted to. But he was mobile enough to make things happen. My question is, how's my man's feel this morning? Because them painkillers have worn off.
Let's talk about some things that are sticking with us after this one, because I will tell you what, for all the cool stuff that happened in honestly both of these games, NFC, it was more weird things, but in both games, there were certainly things worth talking about. The image sticking with me is one of 22-year-old Joseph Asai, Bengals defensive lineman, sitting on the sidelines sobbing.
How old is he?
22. 22 years old, sitting on the sideline on the bench, sobbing and needing to be consoled by a teammate because of a roughing the passer penalty on Patrick Mahomes that ended up moving the Chiefs into field goal territory. 3 seconds left. They knock the field goal in. It's too late for the Bengals to do anything. Game is over. Essentially, once that penalty happened, this game is done. Two things to say. Number one, yes, it was a fair call on that one. That was a penalty.
It was the right call.
It was the right call. Like, I did not view this and think, like, I can't believe that. That's so weak. It, like, that is what it is. That call gets called in any other game. Week one of the regular season. Week one of the preseason. NFC game. AFC game. With between two horrible teams and between two great teams. It doesn't matter. That play gets called every time. Like, that's a fair call on that penalty. Point number two. I know that we can say that it came down to that play and that technically it was the play that moved the Chiefs into field goal territory. Two things from that. One, none of us were talking about the return before then. Is anyone pointing to special teams saying, how did you allow this great return? And secondly, like, did anyone doubt Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs would get into field goal territory? It was going to happen. Patrick Mahomes is unstoppable.
We can't say it was going to happen.
It was going to happen.
It was likely it was going to happen.
I felt so bad for him. So bad. And how is it when he does something, it's like, man, look at Osai. He lost them that game. I didn't hear anyone saying when Joseph Osai got a tackle for loss, wow, great Osai. It's, yeah, Bengals stopped him there.
Because that's what it is.
When you do great, it's we. And when you mess up, it's you.
Yeah, it is. And here's the thing about that play. My guy's running full speed to the sideline. He's trying to make sure that Pat Mahomes doesn't get any extra money. It was like 3rd and 4, I believe, 17 seconds left on the clock. He's running towards the sideline, and he didn't necessarily have to touch him. Now, it wasn't a push. It wasn't malicious.
No, not at all.
It was just, look, my hand is on your back. I'm running full speed. It's hard to stop. And please let's not ignore that Pat Mahomes, LeBron James, that thing, and flopped and rolled on the ground and sold him.
Well, and immediately his Chiefs teammates knew what happened. They started celebrating.
Yeah, and he sold it. So Asai is in the wrong. He shouldn't even touch the quarterback. I know it's a tough position. But then Mahomes sold that thing, and you're right. The return by Sky Moore, people kind of forgot about that thing. Mm-hmm. That kind of set that up. So you look at that whole situation, but it's hard to say, okay, that lost the game. This is a football game. Look at the number of plays that each team ran. There's 63 for the Bengals, a 66 for the Chiefs.
Bengals were 1-3 in the red zone.
Many, many opportunities and situations that win and loses games. But this is what a championship game is supposed to look like. It's supposed to come down to the last drive. It's supposed to come down to Pat Mahomes driving to win this thing, or maybe Joe Burrow having the ball in his hands. Unfortunately, the young man is going to be tacked with just the lasting image that you remember from this game that you feel like determined this game. Did it play a big role in this game? Most definitely. Yeah. But this is football, man.
206. I thought his knee was toast when I saw it hyperextend too. Oh, me too. God, I felt so bad for him. I was listening to a podcast coming in. It was a couple athletic writers, and they were talking about how after one of the writers said after Super Bowl or not Super Bowl, after the NFC Championship in the 2014 season, it was in calendar year 2015, but obviously between Green Bay and Seattle. Was it Brian? No, not Brian. Who's Bostic? Who was the
Brandon Bostic?
Brandon Bostic.
Seattle legend.
Seattle legend, Brandon Bostic. He was like, I went into the visitors' locker room to interview the Green Bay players after that loss, and he was in his locker, like curled up in his locker, like could not be obviously willing to be interviewed, but like you could just tell, like he was like literally like his feet were sticking out of the locker. It was like he was trying to be as invisible and small as he could because he just felt so horrible. The idea of having your name in that moment tied to you forever. Asai wasn't a regular starter, had a great season, and importantly had like the best game of his season. And it's such a bummer it ended that way. But we'll talk about some of the lessons we learned from all four games, and one of them for the Bengals will tie directly to this play, which is why we're focused on it so much. Every time you watch these games, it's like the NFL kind of knows how to pull at your heartstrings, and there's always these moments where you just, oh, God, I feel so bad for him. Go back to Mahomes on the other side, though. Bump, it feels like Mahomes firmly establishing his path toward being an all-time great.
I think we already knew he was on that path.
Oh, yeah.
But during the journey on that path, you're going to have moments like this. You're going to have moments where you're doubted and you need to show up and you need to show out and perform. My guy was 29 of 43, 326, two touchdowns, and like I mentioned, was mobile enough. I saw him throwing off that left foot, jumping and throwing, like not being able to push off his back foot, awkward arm slot, still doing some of the things that we're used to seeing. And I've seen him a couple times having to be carried to the huddle. Like, you know, I can't put any pressure on my ankle right now. He did exactly what he needed to do. Also what he did, he elevated the play of the guys around him. Obviously, Travis Kelce is always going to be good for a good game. 7 receptions, 7-8 yards and a touchdown. But then you got Valdes-Scantlin had himself a game. 6 for 116 and a touchdown. I remember talking about this game and go, look, somebody who doesn't necessarily have big games needs to have a big game. And that's exactly what Marquez Valdes-Scantlin did for the Chiefs. And then you got to talk about the supporting parts around him, too. Like, Pacheco was finishing runs, man. I'm watching this young man run. He only had 5 for 59. 5 for 59. But he was finishing his runs. When it comes to receptions, run the ball, he had 10 for 26. But at the end of every run, he's lowering the shoulder. Boom, he's delivering a blow. Those are the type of runs, the type of plays that people forget. They get lost in all the chaos of a championship game because of all these big plays. But as a teammate and as a defender, you're watching this thing and you're watching the way he's finishing and lowering that shoulder and the boom, that's a tone setter. So I want to give Isaiah Pacheco some props too, because he set the tone during this game. He's not a big dude. My man is 5'10", 216. He's a little thick. He's a little thick. But
little
you know
hefty.
What I mean? He set the tone. I love watching him.
Did anyone stand out on the NFC side? Because I know like Sanders, like there were a couple guys where it was like, okay, that guy had a game, even in what didn't feel hyper-competitive, there were still a few guys.
Yeah, NFC,
Hassan Reddick.
1,000%. That guy was a beast. He was such a beast. He was slobbering on the sideline. He was so amped up, yelling at the crowd and stuff.
He was a monster.
I mean, that tackle strip sack that probably could have been a strip sack when he tackled
Johnson. The one that took Purdy out?
No. It was against Johnson.
Oh, yeah,
he tackled
him,
took the ball from him. They said he was down. Even if it wasn't official, just a play like that lets you know that man was in his zone. And then you mentioned him knocking out Purdy, boom, getting to the football. He brought something to the table. And this is a guy that people forgot about. When he left Arizona, they're saying he's done.
Yep.
Forget about him. But that's the beauty of coaching and football. A guy gets his second win in the NFL. You go to a team. You got a new life. You're in Philly. Maybe this town fits your personality a bit more. You got coaches who believe in you. Then you go out and have a game like he did. Man, Hassan Reddick had a day.
Hey, speaking of these games and speaking of Hassan Reddick having been in Arizona, there were two numbers that I wanted to leave you, Bump, and listeners with before we get to headline rewrites. The first was that the last time two number one seeds faced each other, it was in Super Bowl 52, and that there have just been 13 Super Bowls where both teams were number one seeds that year since 1975 when playoff seeding started. The second number I want to leave you, whoever wins the Super Bowl this year will finish with more wins in Glendale than the Cardinals. Courtesy Curtis Rogers.
Man, come on, AZ.
I know.
Cardinals? That's sad.
Imagine being a Cardinals season ticket holder where you're like, hey, man, that one win, that one home win was pretty sweet.
If you're a Cardinals season ticket holder, you probably look to sell your tickets to fans of opposing teams.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, you're going to be able to sell them more so than you would selling to Cardinals fans, right? Like, what a depressing franchise that is.
I know. It's just the idea that no matter what, either the Chiefs or Eagles will end up having exactly double the wins of Arizona in their home stadium. The audacity.
All bad. And that was October 20th against the New Orleans Saints. They won 42-34.
That was their only home win?
That's it.
Against the Saints.
The Saints.
Too. God.
On a Thursday night. So does it even count?
Yes. Yes, it absolutely counts. Well, actually, let's not count any Thursday night games for any teams this year.
Yeah,
I kind of like that idea,
Seattle.
Especially in Seattle. Let's not count that one. You know what? Let's actually end on a final thought. We'll be really quick with it. I am not defending the 49ers. I am not advocating for the 49ers to make it to and win a Super Bowl. I love that Seattle has still won a Super Bowl more recently than them, right? Like, if it's your local team, you always want that upper hand. I'm going to say this, and I'm probably going to regret it. I feel bad for the 49ers. Like, they have an amazing roster. and it feels like they went out with a whimper because you literally cannot win games without a quarterback. Like, it turns out passing is pretty important in football.
It turns out you need a quarterback who's competent. It turns out that Brock Purdy is probably better than a lot of people thought, because you see what happens once Johnson got in the game. And I'm looking at Johnson. You know what Johnson was doing during the week? He was Jalen Hurts. He wasn't the quarterback for the 49ers. He's on the scout team, and he is Jalen Hurts. He knew more about the Eagles' offense than he did about his own offense.
He should have ran that offense, gone out there. Like, Kyle, listen to me. Hear me out. We're scrambling.
Hey, RPO this thing all day.
Just do it.
All day.
Do you think that Kyle Shanahan should have done something else? Because for me, I'm seeing the critiques of Kyle Shanahan going, what am I supposed to do if I'm Kyle Shanahan? What do you want me to do? Some of the, not pre-snap motion per se, but the immediate after the snap motion on some of those plays looked really cool. Pitching to each other and a bunch of laterals. Just neither play ended up going anywhere. But like, what's Kyle Shanahan supposed to do when you're down to your fourth quarterback?
Exactly what he did. There's nothing for you to do. You don't have a playbook.
Fifth quarterback at that point.
You don't have a playbook for Josh Johnson. You didn't anticipate getting to this. You didn't anticipate getting to Brock Purdy. Like I said, this guy, Josh Johnson, was a scout team quarterback. Like, you know what? Say what you want about Shanahan. His hands were tied. Yep. There's nothing he could do.
All right, let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacy.
Headline number one, the Kraken head into the All-Star break back in first place of the Pacific Division with a 3-1 win over Columbus. What's the real headline?
Just like we all saw coming. Who couldn't have predicted this, right? The Kraken being in first place in the Pacific Division past the halfway point of the season? I mean, I absolutely saw this kind of offensive improvement from the team, but that's just me, a sports expert.
You were
a
hockey
expert.
Exactly. Hockey expert is what you are.
Yeah, that's right.
Seattle sitting at top of the Pacific Division. What's up, Vegas? What's up, L.A.? I love you. I got love for L.A. What's up, Edmonton, Calgary? We at the top, baby.
Anaheim.
And started from the bottom, now we here. All right? That's all I got to say. Kraken, let's go.
Can we get that Drake song for like anytime we talk about the Kraken? We introduce the Kraken, it's just going to be started from the bottom.
Yeah.
And then we'll play it.
Now we're here.
Now, I don't know if the Kraken were ever at like the all the way bottom. There was at least Arizona.
Yeah. They're not in the Pacific Division though, so.
No, but I mean, I'm talking like of the league.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can say started from the bottom of the division.
Definitely.
Yeah, that works.
You guys are getting too specific. Started from the bottom.
Okay, fine.
Now we're here.
Yeah, exactly right. Next up.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, WNBA star Breanna Stewart is reportedly down to two teams in her free agency, New York Liberty and your Seattle Storm. What's the real headline?
So you're telling me there's a chance. Now, I don't want to be a negative Nancy on this beautiful Monday when we're coming off a fun weekend and have so much to look forward to. However, is it just me that worries New York is going to be the one coming out on top here?
Man, this is a
it's
courtesy.
It's not just you, Stacey. It is not just you.
It's courtesy. She goes, look, I spent some time in Seattle.
Yeah.
I'm going to narrow it down to these two. But New York, she's from Connecticut, right? That area. She went
it's
to
game over.
School out
They've
there.
They've got We've known Sabrina this Ionescu on New York's team. Yeah. She's a baller.
Yeah, it's a wrap. Say goodbye, Rihanna. I appreciate you. All you done. Thank
you. We'll hold out hope, though, that she comes back.
Yeah. You said Brianna. It reminded me of Rihanna. Did you see the tweet that said, congratulations to the two teams that just played their way into a Rihanna concert?
Where's Rihanna been, man? She's been gone for like
she's
5, 6
kid.
Years.
She's not even that. First of all, Rihanna, we've been waiting on that next album for a while, long before the kid was born. Okay, we don't need to stay on this topic. I'm really upset
kids
Rihanna hasn't put out another album.
Having kids changes plans in a dramatic way.
Marie Kondo knows that.
Yeah.
Bump, did you ever watch this?
Okay. The tidying up with Marie Kondo on Netflix.
It was this Netflix show about this woman, Marie Kondo, who's amazing. Like, she would tell people, hey, here's how to tidy up your house. And it was kind of like this minimalistic thing where it was like, if you have something that doesn't give you joy, get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, if you have stuff you don't need, get rid of it.
They only did
the
one season
thing
of the show.
And it was so addictive because there's something, I don't know about you guys, maybe someone doesn't agree, there's something weirdly satisfying about watching a place get tidied up. Like when you watch like a home makeover where things are organized and neat and
folded.
That's how
I feel about my backyard.
Yeah, there's just something satisfying, right? Like that video game where you can mow lawns. It's kind of like that. But it's the equivalent of like watching shirts be folded into triangles.
So her show only did one season.
Right.
And there hasn't been a season since. And people have been asking her all the time, when's it coming back?
Where's the new season?
And I think she said something the other day, like, she's had three kids since the show came out.
And she's she was like,
I don't have enough time anymore to tidy up. Like, so that's just not a priority
of mine. She did.
And as a parent of a one-year-old, I'm like, yeah, I get it, Marie. I totally get it.
I know. I just love her coming around to the idea of like, hey, I initially loved cleaning the house, but then I had three kids and I'm just like you guys now.
I saw that headline on my phone. You know, it sends you like some headlines. So I didn't know what you guys were talking about. I saw the headline. Now it makes sense.
Yeah.
And yeah, when it was just me and my wife,
our condo was nice.
Everything was white and
stuff.
One kid comes around. All right, we need a different couch. We've had like four different couches.
You can't own anything white or cream with kids.
Nah.
Nothing.
Now we can. My kids are old enough now to where they know, like, don't even come upstairs. This is our living room. Yours is downstairs.
What's the nicest thing one of your kids ruined when they were little?
The couch, man. We spend so much money on couches. And my wife is obsessed. Like, I'm like, look, if you're going to go big on the couch and the bed, right?
Yeah.
We spend a lot
of time there.
On that stuff. And my kids spilled, like, we had some wine there, spilled the wine. Oh, like, anything that you can imagine that could ruin a white couch.
It happened.
It's been
God, you guys are like a Bounty commercial.
We have a white Bounty comforter on our bed, and we have a strict no food rule for
the bed.
Yeah, because, look, you don't want to have, like, chocolate stains or, like, tomato sauce or anything like that on sheets or just anything.
I don't want to brag. That's not really my brand. But my mom did tell me that when I was little, I didn't need a bib.
Okay.
You didn't need a bib, huh?
That's so disrespectful.
Headline number three, after being stripped of their first-round pick in this year's draft for tampering with Tom Brady, the Dolphins are not expected to pursue the quarterback if he chooses to return in 2023. What's the real headline?
Well, you know what they say. Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, can't get fooled.
Can't get fooled again.
I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says fool me once, shame on me.
You can't get fooled again. Congratulations to all our Gen Z kings and queens that have no idea what that line
is from.
You weren't
even born yet.
Nah.
His camp,
I just imagine his camp on the side like, come on, George. Get it out,
You got it.
You're almost there, George. Come on.
You can't get fooled again.
Can't get fooled again.
All right. Well, we talked about watching these four games. We have an entire week. In fact, we have 2 weeks to talk about the Super Bowl. And so we aren't going to jump ahead just yet. What we're going to do is look back at Sunday's games. The lesson learned from all four teams during conference championship weekend. I cannot wait to get to the lesson learned during the 49ers game. That's next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
The lessons learned from all four teams. This isn't just in the conference championship rounds, but it's going to reflect a little bit on part of the seasons. Let's start with the AFC, shall we? Lesson learned from the Bengals. Sometimes it really does come down to one unlucky moment. Now, the roughing the passer call on 22-year-old defensive lineman Joseph Asai was completely fair. I think there are some people that think Patrick Mahomes flopped, and he did, quite frankly, a little bit. But
a little bit.
It doesn't matter. Everyone on the Chiefs sideline saw that call.
He looked like he got shot from a distance from a sniper or something.
Because he knew. He felt himself get touched. He had both feet out of bounds. Mm-hmm. Asai was out of bounds. That was a call. It was a fair call.
It was fair.
It was something that Joseph Asai knows he shouldn't do. He knows the rule. It's just you're caught up in the moment. He played his heart out in that game, had a great game. I think two quarterback hits, a tackle for loss, five tackles. Like, he had a great day, but he's going to be remembered, at least from this game, for that moment. And here's what's a bummer. There were actually lots of plays that both teams made that could have dictated that game. It's just that that's the final one that happened. And sometimes that makes all the difference.
Well, let me say big ups to Asai, man. You forget that these are kids. Some of these are kids, 22 years old. He's out there just trying to make a play, and then he has to answer to the media. He's got his teammate cursing him out in the tunnel. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I forgot who that guy was.
Jermaine Pratt. What'd you make of that?
That's not a good teammate.
I thought it was unnecessary. Micah Parsons retweeted it and said that is lame.
That's lame as heck, man. That's your teammate. You think he did that on purpose? You think he wants to lose this game?
He was literally crying in the locker room but still taking questions.
You act like in Pratt. You showed me a game where you graded out 100%.
Thank you.
No one grades out 100% in football. I really didn't like that. You're supposed to support your guy in that moment.
He had more. I mean, I know he's a defensive lineman versus Pratt as a linebacker, but Asai had more quarterback hits and more tackles for loss than Pratt. So.
Yeah, he had himself a decent game.
Yeah.
But you're right. In a football game, there's a lot of events that lead to different events that lead to different events. And this one was so costly, and it's the last thing that you saw. So you're going to put a lot of the blame on Asai. But if you really break down the game, there are several moments in this game where you can say, all right, well, you know, that affected the game. This was just the biggest one, mm-hmm. right? You mentioned you felt like Pat Mahomes and them were going to get into field goal range.
I mean, we'll never know.
We'll never know, but they were likely going to do it.
My belief is that they would.
Just because of Mahomes and what he does, especially in those moments. Travis Kelce does a great job finding space in zones. Mm-hmm. Valdez was balling at that point. I think Pacheco was out. He had concussion protocol. Mm-hmm. But they got weapons everywhere. It's just unfortunate, man. And the real football players, the real football fans are going to look at this situation and take it for what it is. It's one moment, a big moment, but one moment. There are chances the Bengals had to win this game, to go out in front, to drive down the field, but you got to put it on the foot or you throw an interception. It's just, this is the lasting image of this game.
If I was Zach Taylor, I feel like my lasting impression, us as fans, sometimes it can come down to, you know, one unlucky play. If I'm Zach Taylor, I'm saying we win as a team, we lose as a team. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, if Asai goes out there and gets a sack, he got a sack. It's on his stat sheet, but we stopped them. Like, that's what it becomes. If Joe Burrow gets a touchdown, we got a touchdown. And you cannot then flip it when one person does one thing, unless that player is completely dispensable and a horrible part of the team or like a toxic presence. But this isn't that case. This is when I'm really interested to see how Zach Taylor continues to lead this team and how Joe Burrow does, because the more pressure there is, the more expectations there are, the more easily you can fracture. It becomes a really, really cool kind of example of coaching. Curious to see what the Bengals do coming out of this one. All right, let's head to the other AFC team. The lesson learned from the Chiefs. Sometimes it really does come down to the team with the best quarterback.
Pat Mahomes showed you that. That's why you pay him $50 million. I hope for all you guys out there who say you can't win with a quarterback getting paid all that money. Now I'm sitting here thinking, all right, Pat Mahomes, just prove him wrong. Prove that you can do that. And Pat Mahomes was the best quarterback on the field on that day, and he wasn't even 100%. So I think that shows you just how good Pat Mahomes is. Mobile enough, sliding in the pocket, realizing I can't get outside this tackle like I used to and buy a whole bunch of time. I'm going to be a different type of quarterback. But people talk about Pat Mahomes and his mobility. He's one of the most accurate passers from the pocket anyway. Mm-hmm. So I think he just showed you, like, look, whatever type of game I need to play is a game that I can play. You need me to sit in this pocket? For sure. You want to blitz me? He's one of the best in the league against the blitz. I'm gonna eat that blitz. I'm going to throw into the blitz. You need me to make a play at the end of the game where my ankle was throbbing? Now, I had a high ankle sprain. I played in the Apple Cup my sophomore year, I want to say, with a high ankle sprain. First two quarters, you feel it, but you're mobile. You can get around.
Were you injured in the game, or did you enter with the sprain?
I entered with the sprain. I was out for about 2 weeks, and I said, you know, I'm going to suck it up. Give me what I need to get through this game. I get through the game. Third quarter, I'm stiffening it up. Fourth quarter, I'm hobbling out there just sitting in space. Oh. So I look at Pat Mahomes, and I know the pain that this guy is going through, and I'm seeing the way he performs. And he put the team on his back. Did he get some help from referees? Every game you can say that. All right, in four down territory, I'm going to point out some of the instances where they got some help. Because a lot of people are talking about the Chiefs getting help. Yeah, they got a little bit of help, but this guy still had to throw the football. He still had to lead. He still had to complete a bunch of passes. Kelce still had to do his thing. So the best quarterback won, but he was pushed by probably the second best quarterback in the league right now.
That's a really good point. Let's jump to the NFC here. I'm going to wrap up with the 49ers because it leads very nicely into 10:45, where I cannot wait to get into this debate. So I'm going to start with Philadelphia, the number one seed headed to the Super Bowl. The lesson learned from Philadelphia, not just in the conference championship round bump, but I'd argue over the course of their season. It's a simple football rule that remains true. The trenches are where football is won.
Big boys getting dirty in the trenches. You look at Brock Purdy. He got knocked out by a big boy in the trenches, mm-hmm. right? You look at the Chiefs, Chris Jones, dominating performance in the trenches, getting after the quarterback, disrupted everything they wanted to do over there. You look at the Bengals, all playoff run, we're thinking, when are they going to show who they really are? The team that doesn't have a lot of offensive linemen, guys have been banged up. You saw this against the Kansas City Chiefs, specifically by Chris Jones, and can't forget yeah. Frank Clark getting after it too. Football without big boys is 7-on-7. I was just at a 7-on-7 tournament this weekend with my program, Elite Training Academy. Holla at me if you need me. Shameless plug.
It works.
But that's not real football, right? Football is when it's physical. Football is when it's 3rd and 1 and you need a quarterback sneak to continue a drive. Football is when it's late in the game. 2 minutes left. They got one timeout. You got three. You're trying to milk the clock. That's when it gets real physical. And that's why it's so hard to find these big boys, because they are not just walking down East Lake right now. I swear, if I saw a 6'6", 300-pound, 18-year-old right now, mm-hmm. I'd get his number and help him in his career. But that's just not how that works, man. They're hard to find. So when you get one, and you can get a performance like you did this weekend by these big boys, man, you got to love it.
Philadelphia, according to Pro Football Focus, the number one offensive line in the 2022 regular season. Not only that, but defensive line and the defense as a whole racked up 70 sacks over the course of the season. There are a lot of reasons the Philadelphia Eagles are representing the NFC in the Super Bowl, but you have to admit that one of them is what they have in the trenches. All right, wrapping up here with the lesson learned from the 49ers. It turns out you can't win with just anyone at quarterback.
Am I answering that now?
Mm-hmm. Really quickly. Only left you a minute.
Man, Brock Purdy, you guys talking about Brock Purdy. Say, man, just plug anybody in there. Josh Johnson couldn't do it. Josh Johnson could not do it. You need a certain type of quarterback.
Christian McCaffrey couldn't do it.
Yeah, Christian McCaffrey couldn't do it. I mean, you need your type of quarterback, but it can't just be any type of quarterback. So I think you need to tip your hat to Purdy a bit more. And then Kyle Shanahan as well for getting him prepared. But yes, if the 49ers had a capable quarterback, a competent quarterback, then this game probably looks a bit different. Who knows? I can't tell the future.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we've seen what Purdy can do.
All right. Let me into this perfectly. The conversation about Brock Purdy and what he was able to do with San Francisco led a lot of people to say, well, why spend big money on a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes when you can get this done with a loaded roster, spend money and resources elsewhere, and then just kind of get a guy at quarterback? I think what we learned from the 49ers is that Brock Purdy probably is better than people gave him credit for. He wasn't just any old dude plugged in there. And if that was the case, if this team was so good that anyone could do it, Johnson would have looked just fine. In fact, McCaffrey would have looked just fine. But that's not really how football is played. So props to Brock Purdy, who got a little bit more credit after this one in his own absence. But now the Super Bowl is continuing that conversation a little bit. Not in that Jalen Hurts has been compared to Brock Purdy this year, but in that Jalen Hurts is playing on a rookie deal. The Eagles are not spending big money on quarterback. Meanwhile, on the other side, you got the Chiefs, who have one of the most expensive quarterbacks in the game. The quarterback battle in this year's Super Bowl could put to bed an all-important debate. That's next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, we talked about lessons learned from the conference championship rounds from all four teams, but there's one that's sticking with me, and that is from the 49ers game, that it turns out you can't win with just anyone at quarterback. I saw a fair point from a texter on the Mac and Jack's text line saying, well, what if Josh Johnson would have had several weeks to prepare as quarterback with the 49ers? Could you have had just another quarterback in there, given how stacked and talented that roster is? To which I would say, like, yeah, maybe, I think what we learned very quickly in this one is that you do have to have talent at quarterback. I know, wild, but what we're going to see in this one isn't Brock Purdy, because Brock Purdy and the 49ers didn't advance. But we are still going to have a debate about investment at quarterback. And that is going to be with a rookie, Jalen Hurts, heading up the Eagles team. And on the other side,
rookie contract.
And on the other side, Patrick Mahomes, not on a rookie contract. In fact, one of the highest paid players in all of football, who will be accounting for something like 20% of his team's salary cap this season and heading into next season. And obviously it will increase beyond then. So I think that what we're going to see is potentially the first time that a quarterback accounting for that percentage of his team's salary cap winning a Super Bowl. Or we could see a continuation of a team being able to win a Super Bowl in a really amazing window because they have a talented guy on a rookie deal.
Yeah, what I like about the Chiefs conversation is for years, as long as I can remember, people are saying you can't have your quarterback make X amount of dollars and still get into the Super Bowl and win a Super Bowl. And Pat Mahomes has a chance to kill that conversation. He's old. Actually, all right, so let's look at who's getting paid for the Chiefs.
Okay.
All right, you got Chris Jones, who's getting paid $29 million. Orlando Brown, $16 million. Frank Clark, $13 million. You have Travis Kelce, $8 million. So I'm looking at this. I go, there's a formula right there. All right, you pay your offensive line, you one or two guys there. Mm-hmm. You pay your defensive line, one or two guys there. And then you pay an offensive weapon. After that, you start to fill in the gaps. You start to get guys like Marquez Valdes-Scantling, who's getting paid $4 million this year.
Right.
And you find a guy like Hardman, who's getting paid $4 million this year. And then you start to piece it together. You bring in a Carlos Dunlap, a veteran, who's getting paid $3 million. Then you draft,
Juju,
right?
Juju can't be getting a ton either.
Juju, where's Juju at? I don't even see Juju.
He's way down the list. To bring him in and have one of his best seasons in forever.
So what I'm saying, you pick those guys up and you draft well. You have a McDuffie, who was a guy who was playing nickel for these guys, were now drafted out of University of Washington. So there's a way to do this. And the Chiefs are showing you that way. Look, it's possible. But how do you do it? Quarterback, offensive line, defensive line, fill in the gaps after that. Now, there might be other ways to do it. You might be able to play a linebacker and find talent there. But it's all about accumulating talent. There's different equations to be successful. We're seeing one with the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, if we go to the other side and look at the Eagles, how are they doing it? They went out. They acquired a big-time receiver.
Reddick.
Receiver and A.J. Brown. You bring in Hassan. You draft Devontae Smith. Yep. You bring in Jalen Hurts, a second rounder, right? There's a different ways for them to do it. You find a little spark plug in Gainwell, the running back, who had a couple of big runs there. So there's different ways to do it. I think people are so infatuated with doing it a certain way to where they ignore the possibilities of, you know, just doing it differently. And I think that's what we're seeing with the Chiefs. And that's part of the reason why I want them to win it, just so we can kill that noise and say, look, you can pay a quarterback and still win ball games.
Yeah, I would love for that to happen too, because if anything else, it makes the conversation more interesting. I also think that there is a correlation between, this is just my opinion, there's a correlation between spending a lot of money on the quarterback and not being able to win Super Bowls, and that you don't have a lot of flexibility elsewhere on your roster. I don't think it is direct causation. And what I mean by that is that teams that have great quarterbacks win a lot. Like, if you have quarterbacks that you are spending a lot of money on, when we talk about those top-end quarterbacks, we're talking about Aaron Rodgers. We're talking about right now Patrick Mahomes, right? We were talking about Russell Wilson here in Seattle. We're talking about guys that are getting a lot of money because they win a lot of games. And what happens when you win a lot of games? You aren't picking fifth overall. You aren't picking first overall. You aren't picking 10th or 15th overall. You're
right.
not reinvesting in the draft and getting back all that talent. So if you miss in the draft, well, now you got to look at free agency to try to get talent. And now you got to talk about, you know, being limited in free agency. I think that's when it starts to affect you. I think it is just really, really hard to be successful for a sustained period of time in the NFL. And a lot of the times when we see teams that are getting it done with rookie contracts, how many other guys on that team are contributing and they were, you know, second overall, 10th overall, 5th overall, 15th overall, what have you? Right.
Yep.
It's also great drafting that helps build a lot of those Super Bowl teams. And there are other factors at play. And I know that. And I think people always look at the Tom Brady thing and say, take less money. But Tom Brady was still accounting for like 15%+ of the salary cap in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that we just see you're spending money on a quarterback and you don't have money to build your team in free agency. What team is built exclusively via free agency? No, that's not what hurts you. What hurts you is winning all the time.
Yeah, when you win all the time, you get lower draft picks, and there's just different ways to do this. And
yeah.
I'm looking at who are the teams, at least in my lifetime, right, my 37 years on this earth, the teams who are growing up that were constantly in the mix, it were Pittsburgh Steelers. It was the Rams. It was the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
The Falcons had some good runs there. The Cardinals
Colts.
Had good runs there. The Colts. Like, and all, what do all these teams have in common? They're irrelevant every single year because they have an elite quarterback. Do they win it every single year? No. There's a reason why football teams don't go back-to-back.
How many Super Bowls did Peyton Manning win with the Colts?
He won one with the Colts, exactly. one with the Broncos. It's hard to win Super Bowls in the NFL. That's what people have to wrap their mind around. This is not the NBA where you put a couple guys together and they can make a run for 5 to 6 years. That's not how it is. Because there's so many moving pieces, because guys leave, because it's a game of inches, because referees have impacts on the games and stuff, it's just hard to win. Wouldn't you want to give yourself the best chance to win by having the guy who touches the football the most be one of the best in the league? Yes, you're going to have to pay him, but you know what happens when you pay him? Sometimes you stumble across a Pat Mahomes who can win a game on a broken leg and just off of sheer just grit and desire. Those are the type of dudes you need, and that's the hard part. There's only about 4 or 5 of those guys in the league a year. So people, and then you look at the 49ers and Brock Purdy and you say, okay, that's a way to do it as well. Yeah, that is a way to do it. Just to back my point up, there are different ways to get this thing done. Me personally, I would love to have a quarterback that I know, end of the game, driving to win, he's going to give us a chance to win the ball game. Rather be like, all right, man, I got this rookie in here or this cheaper quarterback. All these other pieces have to go right for him to win. He cannot will. He cannot out-talent. He cannot out-perform a defense. He's going to need all this help. During the season, give him that help. But when it's time to win, I need an Aaron Rodgers. I need a Peyton Manning. I need a Russell Wilson.
Well, and all I'm saying is you're exactly right. And if you start saying, okay, well, those guys, you know, they're great, but who else? Well, you can't keep moving the goalposts. You can't be like, okay, well, a quarterback now won accounting for more than 20% of the salary cap, but it's Patrick Mahomes. I mean, he's so special. He is. He is an unbelievable player that is in a class of his own. But then when do we, you know what I mean? Like that, then that stat is no longer true. You don't get to keep moving the goalposts. I mean, you can say, and in my opinion, I don't know how many other quarterbacks would be able to do this except for Patrick Mahomes, but it doesn't matter. The stat is now changed and the conversation is now changed.
Mm-hmm.
And the conversation instead becomes, okay, well, how else did Kansas City do it? Did they do it because they were still able to find a way to spend a ton of money on free agency? I don't know. Maybe they did it because they extended the right players. I mean, you could look at them cutting ties with Tyreek Hill as being part of what kept them, Curtis, you pointed this out, part of what kept them a competitive Super Bowl roster, deciding to part ways with one of their best offensive weapons probably a year or two before they needed to, right?
Yeah.
Like there are specific things that this team has done should they win a Super Bowl to keep them competitive. And I just think there's so much context around a quarterback cap percentage that has a big impact on whether or not you win a Super Bowl.
Real quick, formula. Good quarterback, good offensive line, good defensive line.
That's right.
You got a chance.
All right. We are going to go over some of the plays that tell the story of these games. Bump, you're going to talk about some controversial calls coming up in four down territory. Lots of fun stuff in the timeline. Don't go anywhere.